You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for NZ On Air Music Presents Rewind.
Yes, it bloody is. This week, Lucia is talking to Head Like a Hole. Big thank you to NZ On Air. We love you a lot.
Hi, we're here with Nigel from Head Like a Hole. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Head Like a Hole formed in 1990. What was the process of forming a band in this time like?
Incredibly difficult, actually. Because it's not like now where, you know, high schools have music programs and,
yeah,
you know, Mike Chan's initiatives and things like that. So when I left school, I was always trying to start different bands, and I'd get in one band and then someone would leave and, you know, it would turn into another band. And I was actually incredibly lucky when I met Mark, our original drummer, because he was like one of the first guys I jammed with that actually stuck around. And at that point, Nigel, or Booger Beasley as everyone knows him, was at art school in Auckland at Wycliffe, which I drove past the other day, and it's now the Church of Scientology. Fuck, that's bizarre. Anyway, and we'd known each other, you know, we went to high school, and since 15 years old we always said we're going to be in a band together. But when he left art school and came back to Wellington, I was like, well, you haven't learnt an instrument, bro, so you're going to be the singer.
I don't know when it was, but you moved into a villa that was previously an illegal abortion clinic and had a big history and was a hub for the artistic community in Wellington. And there you set up a four-track home studio, which was known as the Stench Room.
That's right.
What was it like setting up your own studio and recording in it?
Okay, so that's 301 Willis Street, which is unfortunately gone now. And it had like this massive history behind it. People like James K. Baxter and Frank Sargeson lived there, so it had like a literary movement. And like you say, it was a legal abortion clinic, and then skinheads lived there. And I moved in. Graham Tuckett, the film reviewer, who actually just did a really good post because we've got a documentary coming out soon.
Oh, sick.
He was living there, and I moved in, and it had about eight rooms or something. It was this big old two-story house, and I ended up renting out the washroom and this kind of shack outside. And as sort of the band got going, and you know, once we did a couple of albums, I was like learning a little bit about the recording process, and went and got myself a four-track. I ended up with a eight-track as well, which we did I'm On Fire on, and it was just really great because it meant we could demo all the stuff. And not only that, like all the local bands started asking me to record stuff for them. That's where we, funnily enough, recorded I'm On Fire. I recorded the actual track on a broken 8-track that only had 7 tracks working. No outboard equipment at all. And I've never had someone go, oh, that song's really great, shame about the recording. So it kind of like, at that point we were going into studios and, you know, spending heaps of money, and I was like, this is a bit weird, like, you know, this cost me nothing to record, and it's like one of our fans' favourite songs, yet we'd still be going into these studio situations that cost you tens of thousands of dollars. So, yeah, that kind of meant a little bit of shift in thinking about how we were going to do things in the future. So,
yeah, just that authentic sound.
Yeah, at one point the plan was to actually set up, like, you know, a full, you know, as good as it would have been for the situation I was in studio, and actually doing the band's albums and, you know, just doing that DIY punk ethic, you know, just keeping it all down home and keeping it like that. But I don't think we quite had the courage at that point, so, yeah.
You mentioned a documentary. What's this? I hadn't heard about it.
This guy called Julian, this friend of ours who shot a few videos like Wet Rubber, and he did a few She-Hard videos as well. He started coming on he came on a tour with us like back in the 90s to shoot a video, and he ended up just like shooting all the stuff. And then about 5 or 6 years ago he said, oh, I'm going to make a documentary on you guys. And we were like, oh, okay, well, you know. So he just started coming with us on tour and coming around to the practice room and coming to our houses and stuff. And he's just finished it. And it's going to be in the New Zealand International Film Festival. So, and it's pretty raw. It's pretty open and honest. Like, there's no holds barred. You get to see everything, like the highs, the lows, good times and the bad times. So I was a bit apprehensive about it at first because of some of the things that are in it, but I saw a cut of it about a week ago and I'm quite stoked with it, actually. Yeah, I mean, just to have a documentary made about your band, it's like, you know, that's bucket list kind of stuff.
Yeah, but totally awesome. Well, I look forward to watching that. Stories say that in your original days your gigs were pretty crazy, with you performing naked and just going wild and all of that. Do you think you still hold a similar energy in your current gigs, or have you chilled out more as time has gone on?
No. I mean, the naked thing's gone, but I mean, the type of music we play, you know, it's got to have that crowd energy that you feed off and then they feed off us. So no, we just couldn't. If it got to the point where we were just walking up on stage and standing there and playing, I'd be like, it's over, man. I mean, because we're a live band.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so for us, that's what it's all about. You know, I love all the aspects of recording and all that kind of thing, but the live show's where it's always been at. Because when we started the band, one of the main reasons was like, hey, there's not really any local bands to go and see that like really blow us away, so let's be that band.
Awesome.
And also, it was such a crazy time, you know, that we'd left the 80s and gone into the 90s and that whole grunge movement happened, and it was just really crazy because all at the same time there was still like the Spice Girls and stuff and Backstreet Boys having massive hits, but yeah, on the other side of the coin, you know, Nirvana and
yeah,
you know, all those Seattle bands were just like caning it, but it really looked like the 90s were just so great for playing live because people wanted to go out and watch bands and get into it and have a good time. So they still do, you know, like on this tour, the three gigs we just played have been fantastic, and it's just like the old days, you know, we're playing 13 and a lot of those memories are flooding back, and it's like, man, it's just the same, apart from I've got my pants on.
So. Your music is pretty wild. It's my go-to walking around in a big angry mood and stomping around with my headphones on, playing it really loudly.
Nice to hear.
Yeah. Was there a specific rage that you had that you were expressing in your music, or like anything that this energy all came from?
It's funny that's the angle you take from it, because for me it was always a humorous thing, heavy but funny. I mean,
yeah,
you've got someone like Booger as your front man.
Yeah, there's so, definitely that as well.
But I guess if you didn't, you know, if someone gave you a blank CD and just said, check these guys out, because I remember when I first heard the first Interpol record, I didn't see a, you know, any picture of the band or anything, and it gave me a different perspective. Like, because, you know, I didn't see like some guy posing in a photo or whatever. So I would imagine hearing Head Like a Hole, especially something like our third album, Double Your Strength, with songs like Hootenanny and that, you'd probably, you know, yeah, definitely, like, it's pretty, you know, abrasive and full on, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's great.
My go-to's Beast Wars, the first song off their first album, that's got that, you know, triplicate chug where it's going and it just like perfectly matches my stride. So I'd always, you know, put that on when I was walking to work, and
yeah,
it'd get me in the mood for sure.
Well, we'll play that after the interview if you like.
Definitely.
You came to a bit of an end and then reunited in 2008.
Actually, 1999-2000 that we broke up. Yeah, and then got back together in 2009 for Homegrown. Well, we got asked, because over the years there'd been a couple of times where we'd kind of gone back together, but for one reason or another, it didn't happen. And then the guy from Homegrown rang up and was like, want you guys to headline. And we said, well, before we commit to anything, we'll just go and have a jam and see what it's like. And I remember Booger's got a funny story because he wasn't there, so me, Andrew, Mike were jamming Faster Who's or something, and Booger came back thinking he was getting a coffee, and he was walking up and he said, oh, they must be listening to the CD to see, you know, how the song goes, which we had to do, you know, for a few of them. And he walked in and we were playing and he was like, oh, wow, I thought, you know, that was off the record. So, and straight away it was, you know, from that first song, it was like, yeah, this feels good. Feels right, let's do it. If there had been any, like, if one person had have been a bit, just, it would have been nut, not doing it. Like, all, everyone's got to be totally into it, and then we can do it, but it's that or nothing.
You're currently working on your 7th studio album. How's that going?
Well, that's what I was going to say. So, I mean, after that, it was like, okay, we've, you know, reunited and played this gig. My thinking was, look, I want to just treat it like we're a band again. We're not, you know, just going to go around playing our old songs. We've got to write new music and it's got to sound good. So we did Blood Will Out and then Narco Corrido. And we've kind of tentatively started on our next one. We've been into the studio and recorded two new tracks already, and they're like pretty rad and like total opposites. One's almost like a rock ballad, you know, and the other one's this down-tuned behemoth of a beast that I'm bumming out a bit that we can't just put it out now because I want people to hear it. But we've been pretty busy, you know, practicing for this tour and all that, but once that's over, plan is to start getting together and, you know, pushing those ideas around and getting in there and finishing it so that hopefully we can put it out in summer and do a tour, you know, at the end of the year in the summer, which would be nice for a change because we always seem to go on the road when it's getting really cold or freezing. So
yeah, you released your debut album 13 25 years ago this year, and so you're gigging and stuff again and re-releasing it. Do you have anything else to say about that?
Well, so the thing that sort of pushed it out there was putting it on vinyl, because that was one of the bummer things about the 90s was the fucking CD, because, well, it was a good thing as well. So when we, you know, finally got, you know, we're recording music and putting it out, we were like, so, you know, how many records are you doing? And they were like, none. And we're like, oh, no, you know. So it was only CD and cassette. I mean, we were pretty happy, you know, that anything was coming out, but it was like, oh, I always wanted to do a vinyl record, you know. So my plan was like, let's get that together and put it out so we've got one for ourselves and put it on vinyl. And then it was like, you know, why don't we go out and actually play it?
That was Rewind, presented by NZ On Air Music.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.